Thank you very much for joining me. I'll be back with you again next Saturday. And if you are a parent, a grandparent, an aunt or an uncle, or a very close family member of someone with children, you're going to want to listen to next week's show. Who Took Johnny is a chilling documentary that talks about one of the first children that were ever featured on the milk cartons and the very strange story and twists and turns that took place after his disappearance. You will definitely remember the story once you've heard it. And I recommend you have everybody in your family listen to a tale like this because it is a cautionary tale. And this isn't a story that went away after his disappearance. It's something that continues to take place. We talk about abduction. We talk about human trafficking and more. That'll be next Saturday night on Coast to Coast AM when I step in for George Norrie that Saturday as well. Tonight we're talking with the Bigfoot Outlaws. We've got Jim Bear King and Tim Kunbo Baker with us this evening. Bear, really quickly, give me one of the creepiest examples of Bigfoot encounter that you've gathered from a first-time experiencer.
Well, when I stayed 1 year in Southwest Oklahoma, and that was back in 2009. I talked to a gentleman named Butch Bridges. He was a reporter out there for a small town newspaper. And I called him on the phone because we do a radio show called Bigfoot Outlaw Radio, which, you know, back then it was on Blog Talk Radio. Now we do the show on a weekly basis off of YouTube.com. Anybody wants to listen to it, you just type in Bigfoot Outlaw Radio and you can go to YouTube and type in the search and find it. When I got a hold of Butch, I wanted him to come on to our radio show, which Butch at that time, he has been retired. He's an older gentleman. And I asked him about a location out there near Thackerville, Oklahoma, called by reputation and name as Brown Springs. It's on the north bank of the Red River, east of I-35. Between Dallas and Oklahoma City. And he said that's one of the creepiest places he's ever been in his life. So me and Kunbo both, we was out in Oklahoma 1 year, I can't remember the year, on a outing out there at Texoma Lake. And we just wanted to see Brown Springs. And so one of our other fellow outlaws, Dan Rickey, took us out there and introduced us to Brown Springs. We actually found Bigfoot tracks on the sandbars along the Red River right there at Brown Springs. But the story I want to get into, this young couple, I'm thinking this was back in the latter 1990s, were parking. They were both from Texas, and they drove across the bridge there off the Red River and ended up at Brown Springs outside of Thackerville. Of course, they pulled up there in the dark. The gentleman had taken a blanket out of the back of his vehicle and placed it on the hood of the car itself. Now I'm going to take up from what Butch Bridges told me over the phone. He said that he had his scanner, police scanner, on. He kept it on 24/7 in case something hot come across the airways, and he got this story where all these state troopers and everything was to converge at Brown Springs outside Thackerville, and so he jumped in his vehicle and he took off down there. Well, when he pulled up, there was crime tape everywhere, and he knew a few of the officers involved with this investigation, so he kind of pulls them off to the side, you know. It's a very desolate, spooky looking area that is very rural. Not many people just go down there for no reason at all. Basically, it's private property all around, in and out through there. And he pulled these officers to the side and said, "What's going on here?" And he said, "Well, you see the vehicle up there?" And now, of course, they had a body covered up on top of the vehicle. They hadn't even moved it yet because the coroner hadn't made it to the scene. And he pointed over there towards the spring area where the water comes out from the side of the slope into this little, it's like an artesian well, and it flows into this little spring and into a pond type scenario, and then it spills off that into the Red River. But they had another body over there covered up. And the gentleman said, "Well, what's going on? Give me the scoop." He said, "Everything I'm giving you is off the record." All right. He said, "You see the body over there next to the cattails along the little stream?" He said, "Yes, sir." He said, "That was the boyfriend. And he was found lying over there nude with his head twisted all the way backwards, looking over his back." And of course, Butch sat there and he says, "Man, what would have the strength to do something like that?" And he said, "Well, who's this on top of the hood of the vehicle?" He said, "That is the gentleman's girlfriend. And she was found nude also. But something had raped her repeatedly while she was still alive, because she had all kind of bruises between her thighs." And, you know, of course, Mr. Bridges turns around and he said, "Well, what happened here? Was this a gangland type rape or whatever?" And he said, "Well, I really don't want to get into this all so much, but she not only was brutally raped, she was split open from her sternum down lower, and her intestines and everything was laying everywhere. Said that her eyes were wide open and her mouth was wide open in like a silent scream."
Oh my God.
He did tell Butch that due to the bruising between the thighs, that means she was alive when this occurred. If this had happened after she had been evasculated, she would not have had all the bruising. All right. It sounded wild to me, and it sounded wild to Kumbo when we first heard the story. But we have people come to, they get in contact with us, and we make friends doing this. And one of the gentlemen that come to one of our outings in Northwest Alabama,
Was that the wrap up of that story?
Almost, yeah.
Okay.
He was a lieutenant for a police department in North Dakota, and he was interested in this, and he said, I looked at him, and me and Kumbo both said, "Well, you can find out the truth because we heard it's an unsolved story. Would you go and check into the files of unsolved cases in that part of the state of Oklahoma and find out what it is?" He got back in contact with us, what, about 2 months later, Tim? And he said, "Yes, that is the truth, that scenario did actually happen." And it's been attributed, you know, amongst the locals around there, plus Butch and them, that this was perpetrated by a gang of rogue-type Bigfoot creatures.
My God. How horrifying. We need to take a break. We'll come back. Phone lines are open. We'll take your calls, your questions, and your encounters with dark Bigfoot encounters. We'll do that next here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Dave Schrader. Tonight, a darker look at Bigfoot encounters with the Bigfoot Outlaws. We have links and information to our guests up on the website. Bear King and Kumbo Baker with us. We're going to take some phone calls. If you have questions for our guests or your own encounters, we'd love to hear from you. Let's go west of the Rockies, Elizabeth in Mojave, Arizona. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. What I'm referring to is the early and late 70s in northern Idaho around Priest Lake and Priest River. Numerous sightings, plaster Paris footprints, we owned 30 acres, and we would hear something run through the forest, but not being brave enough, we never pursued it, but very common. So I just wondered if your guest had explored that area.
No, I have not. Northern Idaho is a place that I've been wanting to go, but the closest that I have been is to that is up into northwestern Wyoming, and and a little bit into Washington State.
Well, this is almost to the Canadian border. It's maybe 2 miles from the Canadian border, but like I said, in the 70s all the way through to the late 70s, numerous sightings and all kinds of local people that you could talk to and interview.
Elizabeth, did you ever physically hear these sounds yourself?
Yes, they scared the living bejesus out of me.
What did they sound like? Walk me, can you do an imitation of what it sounded like?
No, but it sounded like somebody that had to be 8 feet tall and quite heavy, but they walked and ran in a very unusual manner in that they seemed to be flat-footed and could crash through anything because they made horrendous noise, enough where the cabin that we had built on Priest Lake, I went tearing back to and said, you guys can knock yourselves out. I'm not going out there.
Wow.
That's something that we have witnessed.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. The way that they can just tear through the underbrush and through seemingly impenetrable thickets. They can run through them like a rabid bulldozer, sort of.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you very much for calling in. Let's go to the first-time caller line, Dawn, in Fairfield, Iowa. Welcome to Coast AM.
Thanks for having me, Dave. This is a story I'm not technically allowed to tell.
All right, we won't listen, then.
He swears up and down he saw a Bigfoot.
Okay.
When he was around 9 years old. He lived on the Van Buren and Jefferson County line in Iowa. And basically, he was the guy who was supposed to go out when he was about 9 years old, mm-hmm. make sure that the hogs had water.
Sure.
So he would go out, and his dad would make sure that he watered the pigs. Well, one night he decided he'd water the pigs after the sun went down. So he decided he would go out and walk through this abandoned railroad track. It was about 20 acres they had. And he would walk down that and just play around and play with the sticks and stuff. Well, he got way down there. He was way down in the sticks. And basically, when he was coming back, because his mom was hollering for him, down the hill comes what he describes as a Sasquatch. He didn't know at the time. It was just a big creature on all fours. But when it stood up, it was about 5'9". It was about the size of a person. So he said that it was probably a baby Sasquatch.
Right.
And he said he never ran so fast back to the house as he did after he saw that. And on the way back to the house, he flicked the switch that watered the hogs just so he didn't get a beating.
Wow.
Just so you know, I don't live too terribly far from Fairfield. I live in Missouri, northern Missouri. But I have researched in that area quite a bit, and up and down the Des Moines River and in other places in southeast Iowa. And there are places there that have quite a good population of Bigfoot in that area. So your area there is like I said, I've been there a number of times, and you guys have definitely got them there. People don't think of Iowa as being a Bigfoot hotspot, but it is.
Well, it's got to be for somebody, right?
Yeah.
Humans don't go to Iowa, do they? I mean, isn't that? Let me ask, and thank you for calling in, Don. I've got to ask you guys, all right, there are Bigfoot researchers out there that have spent their entire life, and the most that they've come away from is an occasional banging or tree knock, a faraway yell, or a plaster of Paris footprint. How are you two able to find locations that are hotspots where there's constant sightings going on, and scientists and other researchers can't find these spots?
Well, they didn't grow up with them in their backyard from the minute that we could walk.
Exactly.
And, I mean, we're nothing special, but you got to envision this. Here, me and Kumbo both was, me in north central Mississippi, him up there in northwest Alabama. We wasn't playing Xbox and on the TV. We was outside doing something all the time. When these things are on your property just within 200 yards of your house,
right?
Woodline, and you hear these calls they make, and you're bored stiff, and you sit there and you listen to these calls, and then you hear certain responses given back to these given calls, we just would automatically start imitating the initial call, and then we not only learned that call, we learned how to answer that given call.
Yeah.
We was bored kids. And due to that, at the time we never had an inkling that it would turn into what it currently has.
Yeah.
Well, haven't hearing your stories and that you're putting them out there, I mean, haven't researchers and investigators, scientists, hasn't somebody contacted you to say, can you take us to this area? We need to, I want to document, we need some kind of categorical proof on this.
We have had a few, but mostly we've had people that wanted us to teach them our calls, teach them how we call them, and use our methods and stuff, and basically give us no credit for it whatsoever. We've been approached a number of times. But,
by major groups.
Yeah. But we, you know, the thing is, people think that they just move into a place and they just camp out in a small area all the time. They don't. They have a large territory. I mean, a lot of their territories will be, 40 miles long and, 15 miles wide or something. And they move through that territory on a cyclical basis or sometimes seasonal basis. And
right.
Bear and I grew up with that, and we learned hearing from the neighbors and stuff like that, and folks talking down at the feed mill and stuff like that, where they were at different times. So we, both of us independently from each other, learned how the kind of property, the kind of area that they travel through. And I've always been like to study maps and stuff, been a geography freak. And so I got to watching, and when I got involved with the military, I got to into topographic maps a lot, for different things. And I got to studying topographical maps of the areas where I knew, where I grew up in the travel routes that they followed. And so I started looking for that same type of terrain in other places around the country. And I started finding the boogers. I'd go out there. A lot of times, I'd just go out there cold. I wouldn't have any kind of a report to go off of.
Right.
I just went into a likely-looking place that had the right combination of terrain, topography, and food and water sources. And I'd stumble around out there, and I'd make a call or two, and sometimes I'd find them, sometimes I wouldn't. But it was amazing. Bear and I have bragged in the past that you can pick us up and throw us down anywhere in the country, give us a topographic map of the area, 20-mile radius around us, and within an hour or so, we can tell you if there's boogers out there or not.
All right, we need to take a break. Hold tight. We've got more with the Bigfoot Outlaws here on Coast to Coast AM. Jim Bear King and Tim Kumbo Baker have been our guests this evening. We're also taking your calls here. Let's go back to the phone lines east of the Rockies. Brenda in Texas, you're on Coast to Coast AM.
Yes, Dave. I would like to ask your guest about the wolf man. We have Bigfoot in our area. I've heard them scream. They've hit on our house, chunk rocks, and been around walking. But what I would like to know on that wolf thing, they said they encountered, do they know what kind of sound it makes? What kind of yell? The reason I'm asking is I have one on a recording that came through, and no one that I've listened to that, game wardens or biologists, nobody knows. They've never heard the sound before.
We have heard some sounds that we think might be it, but none of us have ever seen one make a call. So anything that we would say along those lines would just be speculation. We've heard some weird calls out there over the years in our investigations, and we have a collection of calls that we've collected over the years that, you know, we don't know what it is. So I would be interested in hearing it, sometime.
Brenda, if you could, is there a way to send us a copy of that recording? You could send it to me at dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll forward it on to the boys. But we'd love to hear that audio if you're willing to share it.
Mm-hmm. I will try to find somebody that can help me do that, Dave, because no one knows what it is. And it, whatever it was, jumped out in front of my husband as he was coming home the day before, and we measured the foot track. We're supposing it, thinking it's the same thing, but the foot track measured on the bank that it went up 6.5 inches long, 4 inches wide at the heel, and the toenails went into the bank, and I measured 2.5 inches deep. And the people that looked at it from two different places, one was a biologist and the other were a scout group for a company that I won't name, they said they had no idea what would make that footprint or what would make that sound, and they looked at me and said, I can tell you don't want to come face-to-face with whatever this is.
Well, wow, Brenda, can you tell us what part of Texas you're in?
Northeast, the northeast part over close to Louisiana and Arkansas.
Okay.
We worked up there. We've done a lot of work around
yeah. And we have heard quite a number of reports of the wolfman or the dogman type boogers up in that area.
Well, give us, Brenda, please email me at dave@darknessradio.com. I'd love to hear that, and I'll pass the audio on to them and let us know a little bit more about the area. Maybe we can get somebody out there to take a peek at this. Thank you for calling in. Guys, I got to ask, about a year ago I had a woman come on the radio show. She'd written a book called 100 Bigfoot Nights, talking about her encounters, very violent encounters with Bigfoot, very kind of weird, creepy things. And started off by her kind of feeding. Her family would leave food out for these creatures. And then when they stopped, all hell broke loose. And I was trying to get together to go out there and investigate. And unfortunately, a private organization bought up all that property. It's now fenced and gated. And they won't allow people in. So my question to you is, I would still love the opportunity to report on this and be in a hotbed area of these Sasquatch. And would you guys be willing to take me out some weekend to a known hotspot and someplace you feel 100% confident that we will have some kind of encounter?
Actually, Amy, the lady that works with you and Tim off of Darkness Radio,
right,
I'm setting up a excursion with her in Alabama in February of 2017. Me and her have already discussed this, and when I was actually on the show, I give you an open invitation, and it's still
right.
Open, Dave. Anytime
All right.
you want
well,
to come,
let's work it out. Yeah, not in the hot months because I'm just not an outdoors hot guy. So we'll come when it's a little bit cooler. But I'd love to, unless hey, this is when they're more active. I'll come out, but I definitely would love to get this done in the next 3 to 4 months and see if there's a chance to get out there and have one of these experiences. Let's go to the international caller line. We've got John calling in all the way from Ontario, Canada. John, welcome to Coast AM.
Yes, hello, Mr. Trader.
Hello.
Here is one of the best guest hosts for...
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. What was your question for our guest?
I've had so many paranormal experiences happen to me ever since child, and I've had witnesses with me, including my mother, at an early age in the car. We were sitting in a park. But anyway, I was going home one night. It was 11:30. I was visiting a friend. His wife had died, and I was just, you know, didn't like him being alone. So as I got, I live in the country, so as I got to this one back road, I looked down, and I saw this, it looked like a little boy in teddy bear pajamas, and I thought, what the heck's a little boy? So I went up in my van, I got a Safari all-wheel drive, and this wasn't a little boy. So I kept bumping it and bumping it with my van till it turned around. I wanted to see its face. And it had yellow eyes and with the cat, you know, tight pupils, double row of teeth, but all not straight. They're all jagged like a shark's. And it pounded a couple of times on my hood of my car, the van, and he had a good set of gloves on it. The hair was short.
So wait a minute, this thing was dressed?
No, this was the creature.
Okay.
It was fully furred.
Like, okay, fully furred, all right.
From, you know, head to toe. And I wanted to see its face.
Mm-hmm.
So it turned around, and I saw it, and it gave me one look and show a tease, like, and I just got the impression, like, leave me alone. And it, I could tell it had no intention of turning off the road where I was. It just wanted to keep going ahead. But when it walked off the road, there's no bush, scrub brush along there, no ditches, wide open field, very clear view. And what gets me is when George brings it up a lot about different dimensions, things disappearing and coming and going. And I saw it right in front of me. It just walked right into nothing. And I was so curious, because I'm like that. I'm the guy like in the movie, you know, horror movie. Don't go down. I got to go down, you know. And
wow, very fascinating, John.
It's like it's sitting right in front of me right now, and it walked and disappeared into nothing.
Well, thank you, John. Yeah, I appreciate the story. And that, guys, I want to know what your thoughts are on this. Again, we've heard more and more of these encounters as possible, Bigfoot being something more spiritual or ethereal, and it can just vanish like the wind and take off. I mean, have any of you had an encounter where you've been on the hot trail of this and it is just gone like that, like it evaporated or stepped into a different realm?
Well, they first of all, we firmly believe that they are a flesh and blood creature. They're not interdimensional travelers. They bleed just like you and I, but they are the masters of camouflage. They're the masters of their environment. And we have found a few times where, you know, we'll be tracking one. We found a trackway, and it'll just be leading out across a field or something, and then the tracks just disappear. Well, I just couldn't accept, you know, that they were beamed up or teleported or walked through a dimensional portal or whatever. So we spent a lot of time backtracking, and we have found in a couple of instances where the thing apparently backtracked in his tracks very skillfully, jumped up, grabbed a limb of a tree or something above it, swung over 20, 30 feet, dropped down, and went off in another direction. But they are very adept at covering their tracks, and they have a hellaciously good stealth mode when they want to do it. And they can hide right under your nose. We've had a...
Well, we've climbed a tree before with a step ladder and found the mud on the limbs of the trees where it picked itself up off the ground and run along the limb and then run around the trunk of the tree, got on a further limb on more firmer ground, and then would drop to the ground. We would actually find the caked, dried mud on the limbs of the trees. We scratched our head over that several times, hadn't we, Tim?
Oh, yeah. We couldn't figure out how that they were could sneak up on us or how they could get away from us. When we started using thermal imaging, good quality thermal imaging, I'm not talking about night vision, I'm talking about thermal imaging. When we started using that several years ago, and we could see them even when they were hidden and, you know, down under in the brush and stuff, that's what really opened it up to us, some of the techniques that they use. And I'm telling you, they are the masters of belly crawling. And and it's unbelievable how that they can, you know, we could see them go in behind something. You're sitting here, you got the thermal. They're right there. You know where they are. You look, try to look right at them. Or even during the at night, you know, shine a spotlight over there. You can't see diddly squat. And we had learned just from the smell and stuff like that that we would be really, really close to them, but we just could not find the sons of a gun, you know, couldn't find them. But by using thermal imaging, we've started seeing some of the techniques that they use to hide from us. It's
interesting.
It's really opened up a whole new world to us as far as locating them and mm-hmm. Being able to spot them.
All right, we've got a few.
Crawl out of there on their belly. I mean, they'll belly crawl just like Tim said.
And you know what's amazing? One of the oldest legends that Bear and I have known about, because we both are from Choctaw area, the Choctaws have a legend of a creature called the Nalusophilia.
Right.
And it's their version of Bigfoot. And one of its qualities is that it belly crawls. And it can belly crawl on its toes and its fingers. Very, very adeptly, and it will sneak right up on you and grab you by the ankle and stuff like that. And they really, and it really does. We've actually watched them do it. and they have belly crawled right in there with us before. I mean,
unbelievable.
Oh yeah, multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Let's go wild card line to Cindy in Idaho. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hey, guess who there?
I know who this is.
That's hey, Cindy.
She's an outlaw too, Dave.
What did you want to share with us tonight, Cindy? We've just got about 3 minutes left together.
Hey, well, I just wanted to come on because we ran around in back in East Texas and some of the places we've researched together. I'm in North Idaho now, but that lady, if you can take my phone number, I live close to Priest River, Idaho. If that lady, if you can get my phone number, if she can get my phone number from y'all, I can get
okay,
my
Cindy.
Phone.
Yeah, what we'll do is if I get the contact information from her, I'll forward it on to Kunbo and Bear, and I can pass it on to you and get you that information. Thank you for giving us a call. Let's go real quick. Wildcard line three, Bob in Chicago. Welcome to the show.
Listen, I just don't understand. One of the gentlemen there, it was either Tim or Jim, mentioned that the Bigfoot attacked him and his sister, and the grandfather was there with a 30-30. Why wasn't that Bigfoot shot?
You got two of them mixed up. My grandfather didn't have the 30-30. Tim's grandfather had the 30-30 in his story.
Yeah, well, why wasn't he shot? You had opportunities to shoot this thing, and
he didn't have a firearm. He didn't have time to grab one when he saw this thing coming towards me, my brother, and my sister. He just run off the back porch with no gun or nothing. He knew this thing was going to get to us before he would get to us. So he was just screaming bloody murder to try to distract it so it would not attack us. And I'm not really sure that it was attacking us. It was just the way it played out. If he could have got a hold of a gun, I can promise you this, he'd have been ventilated.
With all these sightings, though, no one has ever shot one. It's just unbelievable.
Well, people have shot them.
They've been shot a number of times.
That's maybe why a lot of these creatures are attacking people. They may have a case of lead poisoning, and they're retaliating. We found out that a lot of times that it's usually human error that has caused a lot of these more violent situations.
All right, Bob, thanks for calling. And I agree with you. It's so hard to believe nobody's been able to actually physically drop one after all this time. Wildcard line four, Doug in Arkansas. Just a few minutes left here. What did you want to share with us? Oh, Doug's gone. Let's go west of the Rockies. Nikolai in San Diego, California. I think you'll have the final say this evening. What did you want to share with us, Nikolai?
Well, there's two things. First, the older gentleman experienced an encounter with a Cheshire cat. Now, the second thing that I wanted to say is about the wolfman.
Okay.
Please don't call them dogmen. They're wolfmen.
Okay.
But you will be excited to know that there is, in fact, roughly about 7 packs in the U.S., in the Midwest, and there is a few micro packs. However, the majority of ones that you have run into are, in fact, mongrels. Ones that have been exiled or removed from the pack.
All right. How do you know that? How do you know that so specifically, Nikolai?
I have done my own fair travels, and I've done my own research. And easiest way to put it is, I am an occult grandmaster.
Okay, so you've had these encounters and firsthand stories yourself. Thank you for calling and shedding a little light on that for us, Nikolai. Interesting as always when you get to hear from the audience what their different perceptions, thoughts, and beliefs are. Again, we have links up to our guests this evening, and I want to thank Kunbo and Bear for joining us. Also, Brenda Harvey Harris for being a part of the show with us this evening. Special thanks to Donna and Nathan holding it down for us back home, and my engineer, co-host, and producer here in Minnesota, Tim Dennis, my good producer and guest booker, of course, Chris Boros for helping me out on the show, and George Norrie and Lisa Lyons. Thank you very much. I've been your host for the evening, and I'll be back again with you next week, August 6th, when we go looking for Johnny. Who took Johnny? One of the first kids from the milk carton missing publications that were going around. We're gonna explore that story in depth. And again, this is a story I think anyone that is connected to children should know about. Thank you so much for being a part of the show with us. I'll look forward to talking with you again till next week. And remember, be kind to one another. This is Dave Schrader with Coast to Coast AM.